Hey, Bob WP here, and welcome to Dev Pulse, Expanding the Stack, a Do the Woo podcast show. Woo! Woo! We would like to thank our sponsor, OmniSend. Whether it's for integration into your own site or building Woo sites for clients, OmniSend is a solution for email and SMS marketing with their CRM solution for WooCommerce shops and your own website. Tell you more about OmniSend later in the show, but let's get into the conversation.
Well, Zach Stepik here again with another episode of the DevPulse's new show, Expanding the Stack. And
I think DevPulse is also new. I think this is just like the first show.
Well, I mean, DevPulse is new, but it's kind of a rebranding of the Dev Chats, right? So the Woo Dev Chats will continue with Mike and Marcel doing what they've been doing alongside us. They're going to keep that going. But you and I, Carl, we are exploring new frontiers.
Yes, we are.
We are going to be expanding the stack. And so for those of you who are regular listeners to the show, Carl and my backgrounds both extend far beyond where we currently work, right? I was a Cold Fusion developer. I was a Flash developer. I was a Flex developer. I was an instructor in the Adobe community, certified in six technologies. Taught everywhere from IBM to MTV. Carl, you've got a similarly broad background, you know, from where you started to where you are now.
Yeah.
And you've expanded your background beyond WordPress just in the last few years again with the product that you're working on and some of the other things that you're doing. So, you know, we have a broad background and designs on doing more than just what we've been doing as well. So, yeah, we wanted to start this show to give people a way to learn what's just beyond what's in their purview now, right? Give them a way to see beyond where they see currently. And yeah, we'll talk about technologies that are WordPress adjacent, like Laravel and other PHP frameworks and possibly some JavaScript and front-end frameworks and all of the fun stuff that is WordPress adjacent and WooCommerce adjacent. But I mean, Carl, this was really your ideas.
Yeah, so exactly. That's like my little brain baby. I think about what I do when I go to a WordCamp. Like, you've both seen me at WordCamps, and I love just chatting with people. And me and Tessa, we did an interview last week too, and we were talking about how we just like talking with developers. Like, there's something about talking about with developers, like just how our vocabulary, just the way we interact, that's like you feel like part of a tribe kind of thing. And
it's like a safe space.
Right.
Yeah, it's a safe space, but there's so much more to like the developer experience and just like coding is important, obviously, but like the idea of expanding the stack is also just expanding your views, your experiences, like, you know, what is it like to start a business, do it publicly? What is it like to, what do you want? You know, we talked about when I was with Tessa, we talked a lot about passion.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like some programmers do it for passion. Some do it for just like a more mercenary stuff. Like, you know, exactly, for the money. We're in video now, too, so we can do all the gestures, and you can see my morning Pepsi habits and all that. But that was the idea for the show, and I'm really excited. We have a lot of guest ideas for talking with people, and Tessa is a great example of that because she's kind of has like her, I'd say, one toe left in WordPress, but she does like developer relations, like she works with developers all the time. She's like trying to, I'll let you introduce, but I'm just talking about what we talked last week, which is like, you're trying to get back into coding and you're like, I'll let you introduce. But basically, yeah, you're talking with so many developers right now. It's so exciting. Basically, you should talk about that too. Yeah. But just having these conversations is the idea of the show about tech stacks, but also just the developer experience these days, because we lose track of that a lot.
Well, and that's a really good segue into talking about our guest today.
Yeah.
Since we didn't do that yet. And I know we all want to just jump right in. We're all friends. But let's make sure we go and
do it in order.
So Tessa, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and about Built for Devs and what it means to be a developer go-to-market strategist?
Ooh, by the way, I'm working with that title because, like, what is my title, right? Like, if I put software engineer, it's like, does she do marketing? If I put marketing, then the software engineers are like, she is not cool, so I don't want to talk to her. So it's working with all that. But honestly, like, you know, Tessa Creasel here, to kind of do the stack, I guess, sort of prevail similar to Zach, I started in open source PHP, which is beautiful. I wanted to build a Guitar Hero community, so I started in Joomla. I don't know if anyone's touched Joomla, but back when it was barely Joomla and getting ported over from Mambo, so just like really old days, and I'm sounding super old when I talk about this, but Joomla, sort of WordPress, Drupal, that's that whole stack there. Got into some product life pretty early on, which is interesting. Got to work with like over 100 different content management systems in all different languages that I had to integrate into perfect first real job because I learned a ton. And then from there was able to expand into a lot of agency roles, building a lot of WordPress sites, building a lot of, you know, sites and agent, you know, agency work, right? It all sort of just varies really, mostly in the PHP technology stack. Then I ended up leaving what I would say is like my last software engineering official, sort of engineering manager role at General Mills. Obviously big, huge enterprise Fortune company there, but I got to do open source projects. So that was incredible. So still working on a lot of PHP. I did get my hands in a little bit of Java, a little bit of C++, and just a little bit of some of that stuff, because obviously that's very enterprise heavy. But I was mostly working in the front end in that side of the world. Once I shifted into DevRel, wow, I have been in databases, I've been in WordPress, I've been in fintech, I've been in DevOps, I've been in security. Let's see what else, social media, although both social media platforms, Twitter being news, Snapchat being camera technology, they don't call themselves social media platforms. So I guess I was in news and media and in camera technology, which was actually really cool because I got to do augmented reality, which is like a whole thing. Which is actually fun because it introduced me to mobile development, which is actually something I haven't been exposed to. But what Carl alluded to, right, is like once I shifted into DevRel, it was very much a, whoa, she's technical, she gets it, she understands business. Let's do these different types of things. And so I was no longer writing as much code as I probably would have enjoyed, but I was still like winning and achieving and doing amazing, awesome things with growing communities of developers. And so I didn't care so much. But now, Built for Devs, I launched that almost a year ago now. I get to celebrate here pretty soon on the domain registration. Mid-February, I think, is when I started. And now, I know, right? I'm excited. And now I'm doing DevRel for a variety of different types of clients and companies. And so I have robotics, ML ops. Oh my gosh, I have a client right now. So freaking cool. It's like I don't even know how to explain it. It's like a screw you cloud. You're not always the answer. There are other ways to host. And it's very much like secure on-prem edge type of case, right? Where it's like, why are we sending all of our data to the cloud? Which I've always been like, why Kubernetes for everything? So long story short, I get to get exposed to so much technology and I love it. I love it. But I need to get my hands back into some actual code because I opened up Terminal, it's probably like been a month now. And like, none of the muscle memory was there. I was like, I don't even know what to do here. Then realized I didn't even have an SSH key installed. So long story short, beautiful business, been able to help a lot of different companies, spend time with so many developers, which to add one little sliver onto that, and then I'll digress on my intro because it's very long at this point, is that I have been bringing together a community. So Built for Devs is very much a DevRel service agency, or an agency when you think about it, of providing DevRel services to companies. But a major part of that is that I have a 5,500 developer network that I've grown obviously over all of those different ecosystems, different community building, et cetera. And so I'm taking that community, you know, the two of you fall into that network, right? And starting to nurture that network and bring them into what is called the Built for Devs Hub. So it's a developer hub. Its bread and butter is events. And so I have been pulling together a lot of different events. And then on top of it, started hosting a 99 Dev Problems live stream show, which Carl was on. Definitely go look for the episode. We had a lot of fun. Zach, love to have you on there in the future. And yeah, I'm realizing that hey, I can make money just hanging out with developers, because when I have the network and the clients have the needs, I connect the two together and it's just this beautiful world for everybody involved. So last thing I will say, developers more than any time ever in the history of my career are yearning for time with other developers. And so this type of stuff, these podcasts, these live streams, these virtual events, any developer curated conferences, developer curated, I want to exemplify that. I'm not going to a conference that's put on by a company or for a for-profit type of a scenario. I will go if a developer is curating it. And I think 2025 is going to be a very stellar year for bringing developers together in that very authentic way. So I digress. Thank you for having me on the show. I'm excited to talk.
Of course. And, you know.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much to pick from just your intro. Like, we talked a lot about the developer events. I think there's a lot to that, right? Like, we were talking LoopConf. There was LoopConf in the WordPress space. That was really great. But there is something, even this show is a bit of a idea to that. It's just like, we yearn to be talking to each other, talking shop, or comparing just notes. Having these kind of communications where you can be nerdy and feel safe being nerdy, you know? Like, I was telling Tessa, I don't know if it was during the show or pre-show, like, my parents or their friends never understood really what I did. It's only once I started doing public speaking, they were like, oh, Carl's a public speaker. They're like, oh, okay, that makes sense to me. Like, you know, like,
this is something we can explain.
Yeah.
I told my parents I make friends with developers, and they're like, wait, you do what? And I was like, okay, software engineers, you know, people who build computer stuff on the internet. I was like, I just make friends with them. And they're like, what? Because, like, how else do you explain it?
Yeah, it's really hard, right? Yeah. You know, like, that you can find little quips, you know, like I hack people for a living or like something like that. But it's hard to explain what you do, right?
I help family members repair their printers. That's what I do.
Oh yeah, totally.
So yeah. Oh my God. If you're like, I'm showing my age, but like if you're mid 40s and you were like a techie your whole life, you were definitely the family and extended family and the neighbors like tech support person, basically. Like,
did your parents have businesses? Because I became their tech support person for all their customers too. My dad would be like, just bring your laptop. My daughter will fix whatever like virus you have on there. It'll be fine. And I didn't mind because honestly, I loved it. I was in high school and I was like, yeah, like I broke into pretty much every computer I possibly could. I was like, how do I brute force through this?
Oh my God. I got so tired of it. Like,
yeah, it does get old.
Early 2000s. I was like, I'm so done with this. Like, you know, like, we just got a new computer. Can you come? Like, I'd have my binder. Okay, like, I'm in Canada anyways. Nobody's going to come and get me. But I had my binder full of, like, all the pirated stuff. I had, like, a whole setup in college. Like, I was bringing bootleg videos and stuff into dorms and everything. So, yeah, I was, like, a little pirate. But, yeah, like, can you come install Office? I need Office. Can you come install Office for me? Just come with, like, CD binders for like the youngins. Like, we had binders like this thick, as big as my head, you know, full of CDs, because installing Office was like 5 CDs.
What's a CD, Carl?
What's a CD? A CD-ROM.
It was 5 CDs to install with Microsoft Office. It was crazy.
Well, and I had developer edition of Office at one point, right? Because I had a subscription with Microsoft where they gave me all their dev tools. And so I had the developer version of Office. No, they gave it to me. Yes, they gave it to me.
Who's gifted? Ooh, you were way cooler than us. We had to steal it.
Yeah, I'd steal it. I mean, I had access to it at my job, but I would just make copies of it. I had all the I had all legit CD keys. I had all the OEM CD key, the CD keys. So that was great.
I don't know how I got the original versions, but I had them too. And I'm thinking back and I'm like, wait, how did I get those Office CDs? The pretty ones that looked like there was a certificate printed on the CD-ROM. It was very gold labeled.
They were very shiny.
Yes. Yes. Foil. Yes. 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 They look like Pokemon cards.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like foil. The foil. It's like trading cards. It was like trading. It was like a foil trading card. It's great. Yeah. Like, But yeah, you were like, you're basically your family's tech support and your neighbor's tech support. And it's like,
I eventually told my dad, like when I was an actual adult, I was like, if you don't switch to Mac, I'm done being your tech support in 2 years. Like I literally gave him a timeline. So he had to find, he found a networking person locally because I was like, I don't do Windows anymore. Because it changed, right? Like XP was where it was at. And then when it like shifted into, I don't even keep track anymore. When it was after like Vista and whatever else and I can no longer brute force into it, I was like, I'm out. I don't want to touch Windows anymore.
When it became NT and there was actual security, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Windows 2000 era.
I was a hardcore nerd. I was like Windows 2000 for my like desktop. I had the server version, basically Windows Server 2000 for like my, because it just ran better. It was just better. But yeah, oh my God.
Yeah, I remember running IIS and hosting websites and all of that fun stuff back.
Yeah. I had the whole routing stuff. We were talking about that. I had a machine with, back then, like the routers that come free with your modem cost like $1,000. So I just had a machine and a Nortel router and just like hacked it all together. But yeah, this is what we're talking about. This is why we need dev events. This is why we need dev events so we can be just nerd out about this. And
yes,
like,
we can nerd out.
Yeah, it misses from the experience and it's just like, what devs are going through, like the job market and all that stuff, it's just all really hard and it can feel really difficult, right? I'm sure you talk to way more devs than I do right now, but it feels like difficult to talk about it with your peers because they don't really understand what's happening or like what to do, because for them it's like magic, like you're just magicians or you like typing away at your keyboard and they don't really know how your work gets done or what happens with your work.
I think like developers right now are, okay, so here's like my hypothesis on where developers are at. I fully agree because the job market is really bad right now. And this is the first time it's been hard again since what I would say is probably like, I don't know, guys, you tell me, but I think like 2015, 2016, things kind of started to like fire up, I feel like, at least in like big tech. And now we're sort of seeing the like downside of that fire up. And I don't think it's necessarily like, you know, COVID 2020, I think was like the flame got lit, right? And I think, and what I mean by sort of fire up is that it was like an over hiring spree. Like it was like, look at all this money, tech is so big, let's just over hire. And I think that now we're seeing like anyone who is a developer, who's been a developer for the last, you know, 5 to 6 years, sort of mid-level career, right? They're like, well, holy crap. Why is it so hard to get a job now? Because most of their career, it hasn't been that way. But I think the other piece of it to add into that is like all of us as like citizens and humans, right? Whether you're in Canada, whether you're in the US, whether you're in Mexico, whether you're like in Europe, right? The world is weird right now and very untrusting. We're all sort of questioning everything that we're finding out. Why are these things getting unveiled? What's happening in our election? All the sort of politics and things, right? After COVID and everything. And so I think more than anything, like humans right now are like, I want the life that I want to live. And I also want the people that I can trust. And so I think that we're in this space of not only the job market is difficult, but also I need a tribe. We're realizing that we cannot be isolated in our homes and we need trust and we need people. And so I think more than anything, it's a culmination of multiple things coming into play, but that's totally just my hypothesis.
Yeah, I mean, I get a feeling like that too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm feeling that right now, right? I'm on the job market because I was unexpectedly laid off by my former employer. And, you know, it does. And, you know, it's hard out there. There are hundreds of people applying for every open role. Hundreds of people. You know, and every time that they say that there's a shortage of devs, I look at the current job market and I ask why. Because, sure, there may be more open roles than there are people. But if that's true, if that is absolutely true, then why is it that every role has 400 or 500 people applying for it?
People are mass applying to jobs, which like we can have a whole conversation about this. I don't think is the way to go. I think you should apply to the 10 jobs you absolutely want. Invest heavy into the research, into understanding that human, into like authentic outreach, going directly to the hiring manager when they're listed on LinkedIn instead of just submitting 100 applications. Because honestly, like coming from the hiring manager side, I've been there. I've gotten the 100 applications and been like, holy mother of Jesus, how do I get through this? Like, it's impossible. So I think it's like...
Hiring is hard.
It is. It is. Yeah, I agree. And sometimes you just spray and pray, right? Because you're like, gosh, I haven't gotten anything. So this is the route. But yeah, I think it, I personally think that, you know, less applications and more thought and time invested into a single application is a better path. But
yeah, I agree. And that's kind of where my focus is right now, is building some very resumes, cover letters, applying for the job I'm applying for, not just spray and pray.
Yeah. Something you really want to do.
Yeah. And so in the meantime, while I'm waiting for, you know, the right role, if there is one, I'm going to settle back into the role that I'm most comfortable in, and that's being me. And, you know, that means that I'm doing consulting work again, and I really want to continue to help people succeed in whatever it is that they are trying to pursue. So, you know, and being that I have that weird title of unicorn where I can do front end, back end, and design, right? I'm in a position where I can help a business that has an idea form that idea into a series of requirements, take those requirements and turn them into design, take that design and attach it to, you know, a series of user stories, and take those user stories and get a dev team to build it all, right? And then lead that dev team. And so that's basically what I've been doing for the last 18 months, is helping customers of my former employer to do that exact same thing. And I really want to continue focusing in kind of that architecture and kind of the overseer role, right? The being the person who is bringing all these disparate ideas together into a cohesive whole. And so that's really where I want to focus. I also really enjoy sales, which is weird for a developer.
Me too, by the way.
And so I want whatever...
In certain circumstances.
Yeah. And I want whatever role I'm in to have some kind of, you know, technical sales support aspect to it. You know, maybe I'm not the primary salesperson even in my own business over time, right? But it's sitting in that technical sales support role and being able to advise is a position that I really enjoy being in as well. So, but yeah, the market is hard, right? And it's a very difficult place to be right now. And when you don't have a lot of runway because you weren't given any, you just kind of have to find your way. And, you know, this is not the first time I've been in this position. It certainly won't be the last, but it's hard. And so if you're out there and you're looking for a job right now and you are listening to this podcast, I want you to know that you are not alone. You're not alone in feeling like you've thrown as many darts as you can at the wall and none of them are sticking. You're not alone in feeling like maybe you should just skill up a little bit more and you can get a role. That's generally not the problem, by the way. A lot of times you will hear that's the problem from hiring managers or other people, and that's really not it. You know, the thing that I would encourage people who are currently on the job market to do is, rather than focus on hard skills, focusing on the things like, you know, your technical knowledge, focus in on your soft skills. Talk to people a lot. Get better at talking to people.
Somebody a long time ago did a meme for me, because I used to say that all the time. It was the Beastie Boys. It was soft skills to pay the bills.
Absolutely. absolutely.
And because I've been a proponent of soft skills for like 15 years or something. Like we actually talked about it a bit in your podcast.
You did.
Tessa, because I used to be, I would do so well in interviews. And they would like, they'd be like, okay, we just have this little formality. You just have to pass a programming exam. And then I'd be like, oh, I'll see you never, basically.
Yep.
So like I had the soft skill in pace in spades, but they do the, which is always funny because everybody says I'm so smart, but I like around programming. And basically I would failed those tests every single time. Like the first job I ended up getting was the one that didn't ask me to do a test, basically. But soft skills gets you a long way because I've done hiring, Tessa's done hiring, Zach, you've probably done hiring. Like, it's the problem that if you've never done hiring, the problem isn't so much the candidates, is that you're trying to like figure out, is this person good for the company to work yep. with and all that
culturally
stuff.
Culturally good.
It's so hard to figure that out, like from talking or from a piece of paper or an application.
Yeah. And now that we rely so heavily on these automated AI tools for candidate review, right? It's the human element of it is the most important part. And, you know, if you're hiring for a role, don't hire for the technical skill required to do the role first, right? Like, that's an important piece, but hire for cultural fit. Hire for somebody who you want to work with.
Yeah, or what they could be,
yeah.
You know?
What your team needs.
Because the soft skills will tell you that way more than the hard
yep,
skills.
Absolutely.
And
I will say there's definitely a mix here, though, because there have been, I mean, obviously you want developers with soft skills, 100%. But also sometimes it's nice to have those developers that want to sit in a closet and be left alone. And I'm not saying that anything is wrong with those developers,
yeah,
but there are some that just like they are powerhouses. They will sit and dev. But you also need to have a team dynamic, right? If your team objectively has to go speak to clients, do you have someone on that team that can speak to clients? Do you have more than one person on that team, right? So that's like soft skills of you still need to create what I think is like a well-rounded team, right? And can those people with the soft skills help the developers who would prefer to stay in the closet improve some of those soft skills, right? So I fully agree.
Yeah, because the problem with the closet one is that he doesn't even want to talk to you.
No, he doesn't. He's just like, give me my specs and let me code.
Just leave me alone,
yeah.
You know?
Yep.
And yep. So that can be a problem too. But
for sure.
But the idea is that if I get to talk with you or interact with you, that's why the networking and these events, we're looping back again to the events because it's so important. Because when you get to talk to someone informally, you just get a feel for them. Way more. And then you can be like, oh, okay, like I could see myself maybe work with this person, or like
exactly.
I really enjoyed my interaction. So you can get a bit further and then you like cut through the noise. But that's really hard, right? If you're like an introvert developer right now, you're like, oh my God, like I have to go talk to strangers at an event. And it's like,
but if they're a dev, they love to talk to their peers. So like, it's just
yeah, exactly.
getting them out and having them see that.
Yeah, but that's it. But it can be scary even inside those events. Like it can be.
Especially if you don't know somebody to start.
Yeah, if you don't know anyone. Zach's really good at that. I'm really good at that. You're really good at that. Like introing people like that, you know, like I just intro and then I do my ADHD thing where I'm like,
bye.
And then I like, bye. And yeah, then like yeah. I leave. And then they talk for hours and it's great. And I've done my job, you know, but that will get you a bit more, you know, somewhere, right? It's not guaranteed, but it helps you.
Whether you're a product or a site builder, OmniSend can help you with your customer or client's email and SMS through their CRM solution for WooCommerce. Product builders can bring their plugins and SaaS to a new level for their customers by integrating with OmniSend. And for you developers and agencies, recommending them to your clients for managing their customer relationships is spot on because it gives them the right tool to build their email and SMS lists, send targeted campaigns, create automation workflows, and track their results all from within their WordPress dashboard. With over 100,000 e-commerce stores already on board, have your clients and your customers get started for free by simply having them search for the OmniSend plugin on WordPress.org.
It feels like we need a matchmaking service. Introvert, meet your developer extrovert, or you're connected. Honestly, I question whether or not I'm really extroverted, but that's a whole nother thing. So it's like, find your person, right? That can go intro you, that can make you welcome. Like if I'm ever at an event, I will be your person. I'm just saying that out loud. Come and find me, even if you don't know me.
Yeah, I do that a lot too.
Show me a picture of your dog. We're good.
the number of times people are like, do you know this person? I'm like, of course. And then like, here, I'll find them for you. And then Zach also, like, we joke that me and Zach together, we know, but basically like 100% of the people in WordPress. Those help, you know, for jobs and things like that, or even consulting, you know, like
super helpful.
Tessa are on our own.
Zach now too.
These discussions can be long. Like, I started a conversation at Portland and it's still ongoing, you know, and I don't know if it's going to lead somewhere, but at least we had a good conversation. Like, the person I talked to there was like, I'm so excited I got to talk with you. So like, just the fact that, and they were a CTO and they were just excited. Like, just getting that gets you a bit further, because it's just so hard, like, to cut through like 100 applications. There's just like no way, you know?
Well, if you remember, I started an agency back in 2017, right? And that agency started because of a conversation with someone that, Tessa, you also know very well, who has said some very nice things about you. I'm just going to read this and we can let you try and guess who it is till I say it. What I love most about Tessa, she is passionate, she cares about developers, she cares about community, she cares about justice. She even helps others learn to care. And so Chris Lemma, he approached me at WordCamp in Philadelphia, and he had just started a new job, and he said, you know, we're going to build this managed WooCommerce hosting platform, which was unheard of at that time, right? Nobody was trying to host Woo well, and the people who were in hosting at that point had no clue how to host it well. There wasn't a lot of knowledge in that domain, right?
No one was chasing down the vertical to niche into it like they could and should have been.
Yeah. And so, you know, Chris approached me. He said, everybody tells me that you're the person that I need to talk to about scaling WooCommerce.
Ooh.
And I mean, that's a powerful statement about the true power of a network, right?
I agree.
Public speaking, talking at WordCamps, being in that community, being active in the WordPress and the WooCommerce communities, that created this, you know, this environment, I guess, where Chris Lemma, who I knew a bit, was able to approach me at WordCamp. And he, you know, it was in the vendor area at WordCamp US. And Mike Sanchez, who was at WP Engine at the time, introduced me to him, and we just had this conversation. And that led to me starting my agency with a customer right out of the gate. And so we did work with Liquid Web. We created the managed WooCommerce platform alongside Chris and his team. We acted in an advisory capacity as they were building everything out, and helped build a little plugin for custom order tables in WooCommerce back in 2007, well before this high-performance order storage thing was even a reality. And so, you know, but that's what this is all about. Those hallway chats, right? You're at an event, you're talking with people, and I mean, that agency is still running to this day. And it started from that conversation. Right. So it's amazing to see how those kinds of things happen. And you know, so that's the power of the network. You know, and if you're willing to put yourself out there and just get to know people, the more people you get to know, the more opportunity will knock at the door.
I so agree with that. I mean, that's how I met all of you, right? Like, Carl, I met you through a job that was like, you know, through WordPress, right? Zach, you and I met through the community, and it was just networking, like just getting to know folks and meeting them. And now there's been multiple opportunities. And we're like, I feel like I can confidently say this, like, I'm dear friends with both of you. We don't get to see each other as much as I'd like, but I mean, I know that I can hit you up and it's immediately like, what do you need? I'm here, which is so beautiful.
Yeah, and I do that for a lot of people too. It's just, yeah, it's crazy. Like, because, you know, I think we talked a bit about this. Like, I never know. Like, I always say you trade one uncertainty for another. When you're a consultant, you're like, I never know. I don't know where my money is coming up from, like, next month. Like,
dude,
I never
same.
Know. You know?
And, sucks. It's scary.
You know, when you have a job, you never know if you're going to be laid off. Like, there's always an insecurity to it. And it's just, It's just scary. I wouldn't even know where to start to look for a job. I would just network and hopefully something would happen, but it's really scary. That's why I think we're talking a lot about it, because it's just uncomfortable. The sprint prey is uncomfortable. It's hard and expensive to network now. Traveling is expensive. Going to these events is expensive. It can take months for any lead to amount to anything.
Absolutely.
You know, it's just, especially if you're trying to do enterprise, just works slowly, you know? Yeah. It works slowly, right? You're basically your default
6 month sales cycle.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I'm at the end of a 3.5 year sales cycle with a local business that I've wanted to do work with forever. I mean, it just takes time and diligence, and you check in occasionally, you see if they're ready, and you try to stay top of mind, but it's really about managing that relationship with the person who you want to do work with, right? I know that sounds really businessy, right? Managing a relationship with a person. Yes, it is a business thing. However, if you apply that to every aspect of your life and you are intentional about managing your relationships, especially as somebody who's neurodivergent, which Carl, Tessa, I know you two spoke about that.
I mean, I'm writing more about it. I'm still writing my year in review. I even applied to WordCamp EU with a neurodivergence talk. So we'll see if they pick it, but I'm very passionate about that right now.
So not to derail this, but Carl, this literally just blew up my life this week. Okay.
Please derail. This is the whole point of the show, tangents galore.
I love it. So to the neurodiversity thing, there's a new TV show on ABC. My husband loves watching TV. And so I'll do sort of some of my work, do my thing, and I'll sit and watch a show with him. It's called High Potential. And essentially it's this woman, and she's a cleaning lady. She has two kids, can't really keep a job, can't really sort of keep things going, but she's insanely intelligent. And so then there was a little snippet or a caption that was oh, High Potential is from this other show. And eventually... I believe it came out in Europe. So long story short, I'm like, okay, what is this? What is this high potential thing? So I started Googling it. Do you know that people who are incredibly intelligent come off like they have ADHD, Asperger's, some of these other diseases, but it's only because their IQ is higher than 130? So Carl, I'm thinking we should get our IQ tested, because I would rather tell people that I have high potential than ADHD.
So I had my previous therapist had health issues and dropped me, and I got a new therapist who specializes in autism and giftedness.
See?
And I always push back on gifted, on being gifted. And she literally said it again yesterday. Well, maybe we could just call it gifted, because I push back, because there's this idea of giftedness. I mean, I'm writing about it. It's going to be in my talk. If Where Can't Be You. If you're listening, Where Can't Be You, pick it.
Accept it, please. I want to hear it.
But what really got me going about the giftedness and where I started accepting it more is this idea of juggling balls. Because when you hear gifted, you think super smart, and there's something around that, but
I just think of someone up on a pedestal, so I'm like, ew, I'm not gifted, you know? Yeah,
and I don't like that. But what she said is it's more about capacity instead of capability. So you have let's say you're a juggler, right? A normal person can juggle three balls.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
But if you're gifted, you might be able to juggle four or five.
Got it.
You know? And you can hold more ideas in your head, more concepts, more tasks in your head, which goes back to your high potential thing. That's why I lit up like that, because it's not about, there's a lot of similarities with ADHD, because gifted people get bored easily, which ADHD people do as well. I always struggle to keep a job. One of the topics is why I think consulting and freelancing is right for me, is that it keeps that challenge or the variety going, right? Which is hard, because that's really high.
Yeah, Zach, I feel like you fall into this bucket too as well. I feel like when I was at Snap, like I could have kept going. I probably had at least another 2 years before I would have been bored. And so I think that's why I was so freaking sad that I got laid off, because I do get bored easily. Like I, once the challenge is done and I've like met what that company needs or sort of what, okay, we won, we achieved, right? Your developer community is at the size you were looking for. I'm like, bye, you can get someone else to maintain it. All the structure is there, I'm out, you know?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I mean, I would get promoted and I would do like all the things basically. Like I did like my last job that I held, I basically did business analyst, sales engineering, like everything. I would have been like director of technology or something, but that's when we talked and I was just like, I just like programming better. There was no engineering track. But see how we're all excited about this? I wrote that in the WordCamp EU pitch, is like every time we start talking about this, everybody lits up. They're like, oh, yes. And it's just, we just don't talk about it.
Because your imposter syndrome goes down then. Yeah, you like feel normal.
Yeah, but we just don't talk about it.
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
That's what I realized once I started like doing therapy, because I don't have official diagnoses for any of these things. But it was just like, I know so many people that this applies to and we just don't talk about it.
Yeah, like I have an official like ADHD diagnosis from a doctor and from an online questionnaire. But when I was looking through this high potential, I'm like, as I look at the normal symptoms of ADHD and some of the things they see in kids and whatever else, I'm like, this isn't 100%. But so much of it felt accurate that I was like, it has to be, right? But after reading this high potential thing, I'm like, maybe there's something here. But again, it's so hard to like, I don't want someone to be like, oh, you have high potential. I'm like, no, I'm just weird. You know, like, I don't want that label.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's discussed. Like, I'll send you the paper after. But basically, she sent me this paper. But yeah, there's a lot of pushback.
Mm-hmm.
Because even giftedness, when you hear about gifted, it's about children.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like my daughter. Yeah.
Right? It's about special needs. It's about special classes. But like, nobody talks about like, what happens when they grow up?
Dude, that's what I'm saying. Like, and that's what this high potential article that I read, it basically talks about how we can't sit in school. I got horrible grades in school, but I'm crazy smart. Like everything was, I was just like bored. I'm like, oh, get me out of here. And see, that's what I'm saying. And like, you struggle at school, you struggle to keep a job, you struggle to find success because it's like, and here's the thing, y'all tell me if you agree with this, because this is the thing that hit me right in the feelers, was it says people who are high intellectual potential have tree thinking. And I was like, okay. And I started reading, and tree thinking basically is like normal people will think about the trunk of the tree, right? And they're like, cool, let me do, as an analogy to your work, right? Okay, great. Let me get everything written down. Let me do all the things. But high potential people will start thinking about every single branch. And like I was telling my husband, I was like, dude, I start thinking about a trunk of a tree and I see the flowers that are blooming and the beautiful green, bright leaves. Like, I can't have a one single thought and have it stop. My brain just takes it to like everything. For me, that was like so relatable of like most people have a single thought and it can end there, where high potential people, their brain just is like lights going off everywhere.
Well, yeah, it's like the juggling balls thing, right? Like you can like you have a higher capacity so you can see the branch, you can handle thinking about the branches and the trunk at the same time.
Exactly. And the flowers and the leaves.
I like to think of it as our brains are constantly playing a game of telephone with themselves, which is why we get lost in these rabbit holes, right? Because we forget where we started sometimes.
Yep, because of the whole tree. We see the whole tree, so we run to the leaves.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And so we go so far down the branch that we have trouble finding our way back to the trunk sometimes.
Yeah, I've been lucky. I'm like pretty good at that, but I think I've been just really lucky talking in therapy. Like I just figured it out subconsciously, like what I needed to self-police, you know?
You're like a high potential. You're like even higher than the high potential, right? You can manage your high potential.
I don't know what the term is, like high functioning. You know, there's like high functioning autistic person, but I like even for the ADHD, like I consider myself kind of high functioning because I have all these systems. Calendars, reminders, alarms, and things like that to just make sure that I don't forget things, don't miss deadlines and all that stuff. But it's really interesting. There's something there. Like same with the event stuff. I feel like there's something underneath there where we're not talking about it, how these things affect how we work.
Absolutely.
Like how we work, how our work environment should be.
We think differently. Developers just think differently, right? And how that plays into
Yeah. How it affects your lifestyle, your work environment, like how relationships, all that. Like in the last year, I've been dating my girlfriend for like a year and a half almost, and she's ADHD. And but it's great. It's so good. Like I've never dated somebody with ADHD and it's so good. But there's so many things that we talk about that we relate to. And even for her, just like having somebody to say like, oh, don't worry about it. Like it's your ADHD. Because ADHD people often get...
You feel so normal then.
Yeah, but also it's because sometimes you get called lazy, distracted, like unreliable. And it's none of those things. It's just like you need space. One thing that I pitched with my therapist is she never heard about it before. But when I go to the gym, I also call it my ADHD safe space because I'll take longer breaks. I'll watch a YouTube video. And then the next break between sets, I'm reading something. Like I just try to not police, because a lot of your ADHD, if you're high functioning, you're like aware of it and you're always policing it. You're like, okay, I can't do this. I can't do that. And having like I can't procrastinate. I can't look at five things at the same time, and being able to, you know, being able to do that for yourself, but also giving this ability to somebody else to feel seen and be like, hey, it's okay, it's your ADHD, like go crazy, you know? And that's so powerful. Like she like teared up the first time. Like I told her that because it feels so validating to understand that it's not your fault, you know? It's not, there's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with you. It's just, it's the world's not well adapted to you. And it's just having somebody just be there and say, hey, this is okay. You're just having that moment, like go with it, like enjoy it, like, and be you. And that's really powerful for people to hear that.
Have you seen the Tara and Barry relationship? And they're on Instagram. It's Tara and Barry. Tara has ADHD. Her boyfriend does not. My husband found it. And like, it was so amazing that he found it because he was like, this is totally you. Like she'll have like four beverages around her and not really finishing any of the beverages. She's sort of contributing to all of them, right? And then she's like, I need my food. Like, and she'll re-listen to a song that she likes like 100 times over. And I will totally do that. If I get a song that hits me in the soul, it's all day I will listen to that song. But check it out, because it was, my husband has dyslexia, which he didn't know as younger. It's something that like him and I have had conversations about and we've been able to figure out, but I think he is high potential as well. And so it's very interesting to have a conversation and be able to do that, because he can poke fun at like my ADHD, which I love because it makes me feel normal. And then I'll poke fun at his dyslexia because he'll like swap letters or swap words or whatever. And it's just beautiful when you can like really welcome and normalize. We are all different. All of our brains think differently. Yes, you can consider someone normal. Yes, maybe those of us with ADHD or dyslexia or Asperger's or high potential or whatever the frick it is that our brains have. The beautiful thing about what I was reading is that it's not a diagnosis. It's not a symptom. There's nothing wrong with us. It is how our brains were created. And I am a Christian. So I was like, God wanted me to have this brain. So every day I'm like, hey, Lord, what am I supposed to be doing with this crazy brain when I just feel out of sorts, right? It's like, how can I come back and normalize? Like, I am normal. I am great. I am awesome. I was created to be this way. But how do I just harness everything that was created? So, yeah.
Read this book. Oh, it's backwards, but I love this book about this. Braving the Wilderness by Brené Brown. So good. About accepting yourself and realizing that, you know, yeah, you have this beautiful brain and it works in different ways. But the challenge that people have is that, like I said, with my partner, is just people make you feel bad about it.
They do.
So it's really weird that we just don't talk about it, which is, again, why this show just reinforces why I needed to do that pitch for the talk, because I think a lot of people relate to this, like feeling, struggling with the world, how your brain works and how to make your life fit and your work life fit. That brain is challenging and we just don't talk about it.
I agree. I think like, you know, and like Zach, you were starting to talk about something before Carl brought in the book, but just really quickly, like, I think there's a lot of neurodiverse or whatever we want to label it, developers because we have found this out early on that we needed to tinker. That's another high intellectual potential, is you want to understand how everything works. So you'll go through, you'll figure out how everything works. You may not want to put it back together. I'm so guilty of that when I was a kid. I'd take things apart and be like, meh, I know how it works now. Don't care. I'm moving on. You know, I'm bored with it now. I figured out the challenge. But anyways, I think there's a lot of us as developers in this. And so that's why I think it is so keen. And like, Carl, I think we should host some events in the Built for Devs Hub that's around neurodiversity. And how can we sort of relate?
For sure. Like, I'd love that.
I've got a couple devs in my circle that feel the same way.
Because like, that's like, speaking of the high potential thing, like I've just like deep dive into that for like the last two and a half years, you know, I'm just really into it because I've just come to realize that it just affects our lives so much. Because like all of us here now, we've all come clean. We all have ADHD. So it does affect our life and in very specific ways, and how people interact with us and how we feel about ourselves has a huge impact.
Well, and you know, so the one thing I was going to say earlier is that I have said for many years that normality is little more than a societally accepted collection of abnormalities.
Yes.
Oh, that's nicely put. I like it.
I love that.
We are all different. There is no one on this planet that is exactly the same as you. So this definition of normal is just what society wants us to be, right? And that is not who we are, right? And that kind of brings me to an important segue, and we're getting to a point where we need to start to wrap up. But one of the things I wanted to talk about is this concept of 10x programmers, right?
Ooh.
Now, I am of the opinion that 10x programmers don't actually exist, okay? There are people who act like 10x engineers. And I read an article on Simple Thread, so I'm going to give credit there, about the 10x programmer myth recently. And it talks about these caricatures, these basically profiles of the types of people who lead companies to think they have 10x engineers. And so the code fountain, somebody who's a never-ending stream of code, but it may not always be the best. They seem really productive, but all they're doing is leaning on the rest of the team to make themselves look productive. The point hog. So if you've ever, you know, walked up to a scrum board and in a physical location and said, I'm taking these cards, the point hogs pick all the easy tasks. The overcomplicator. Yeah. The overcomplicator who turns everything into a Rube Goldberg machine. Have you inherited code from one of those people before? It's fun, you know. There's no problem so simple that it can't be turned into a quagmire, is what the article says. And then the 80%er who gets tasks done, almost. So these are the typical...
That's like a challenge for the ADHD people.
Oh, yeah.
80%.
Yeah, it is. Because you get bored and you're like, I'm out.
Yeah, I'm out.
Someone else finish this.
But these are the typical profiles of what companies see as 10x engineers, right?
But also, what is a 10x engineer, right? I've heard about it, but it's really complicated, right? Because let's say you look at a piece of code, you stare at it for, you have one person that writes a ton of code, but you have a person that looks at the code for the same amount of time, makes one line change, and then it all works. Who's the 10x, right?
Right.
Who's the 10x in that? And like, how do you measure that?
It's a team effort.
Yeah, but it's just... The problem with the 10x is that it implies something you can measure. And I think it's really hard to, like, this is like a really large segue, but like KPIs and stuff like that, like if you track something, people will game it.
Yeah, that's true.
I really fundamentally believe that. And it's really hard to measure intellectual work in terms of output. Because am I a 10x for, like, if I'm out of the office and I'm thinking about the thing for like 5 hours after work ended, is that tracked? You know, it's just really hard, right? It's a bit like the hiring stuff. We need it to know that people are not slacking off or like doing work. But if you understand what the work involves, it's really hard. I don't know how it would fit in those systems. Like, those predate when I worked in companies. Like, I think I would fail, basically, at KPIs and stuff like that, because I would just do the work.
I think that I love this conversation, because as I'm thinking about it, I think that it's a 10x team. It isn't a single programmer, right? Because if you can take an 80%er and put it with a point stealer, they'll take and finish that task because they want the achievement. So I don't know if you've ever looked, Lemma, CEO over at Motivations Code AI, really awesome motivation sort of personality test. I'm an achiever. So I would love to pick up an 80% task and wrap that sucker up and then be like, look at what I did. And not because I take credit for my work, but because I like to get to the end result. I like to deliver. I want that, like, here you go. And so to me, I'm like, it's not a 10X programmer. It's a 10X programming team that you bring back to hiring, right? You build this beautiful team that has all these different, you know, archetypes together so that they can, as a team, function in that way. At least that's how I think it could play out.
And here's the thing, okay? The 10X thing is that there are these mythical developers who are 10 times more productive than their best peers, right? This is the myth. And the reality is that there are some archetypes that actually exist that do make up kind of what that mythical 10X engineer is. So you have the focuser, somebody who's really able to focus and reduce their distractions, that doesn't allow themselves to be distracted. You have the professor. You have the professor who has deep subject matter expertise. You have the rocket turtle who slows down to speed up.
Interesting. Okay.
So somebody who may not be the fastest engineer, but when it all comes together at the end, it all looks orchestrated because it comes together very quickly, but the process of getting there was slow. You have the obsessor who can't stop and won't stop, right? Yep. Most developers like to solve problems.
That's when I start swearing and I'm like, oh, I'm cursing. It's time to walk away.
Some developers are downright offended by a tough problem that won't quit. Like, that's just great. The interrogator, somebody who questions everything. They ask why. You know, they read the Simon Sinek book, and why is now their most favorite question. I'm one of those people. I ask a lot of questions, and I do that to try to understand, you know, where things are coming from. Why are we doing this? Not just how. Right? You have the subcontractor who prefers to farm it all out. People who are, you know, who go out of their way to find the right library, the right API that solves a problem for them. And then you have the simplifier who always finds an easier way. But it's a really great article talking about how this myth of a 10X programmer or a 10X engineer sets these unrealistic expectations of what you should be as an engineer. And if you can focus in on doing one of those archetypes that you do really well, the types that make up the mythical 10X engineer, the focuser, the professor, the rocket turtle, the obsessor, the interrogator, the subcontractor, or the simplifier, if you can focus in on those, and the one that fits you best, you're going to have a higher impact on a team than somebody who's just trying to do the best they can. So with that, I know we are at the end of our time. Tessa, we will have to have you back.
I would love to come back. It's been so lovely chatting with the two of you. This has been awesome.
Yeah, this is great.
Would love to come back. Would love to bring the two of you into the Built for Devs Hub. Absolutely. And anyone else who wants to come in. It's very open. I'd love to help developers host events on their own too. So if you're feeling it and you want to bring devs together, like, reach out to me. Thank you so much for having me. It was amazing being here.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us. And thanks for being our first guest on this new podcast.
Oh, I feel so special.
Before you go, where can we find you?
Ooh, yeah. Good question. I am pretty much everywhere. If you Google Tessa Creasel, you'll find me, TessaCreasel.com. I'm TessaK22 on the socials. And built4.dev is my website for my business.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Tessa. It's been great having you here.
Sweet. Thank you. Thank you.
Bye, friends.
Hey, Bob WP again. Thanks for listening, and thanks to our sponsor, OmniSend. If you've yet to subscribe, you can find us on your favorite pod app, on the Fediverse, and to get all things Do The Woo at dothewoo.io/subscribe. So until the next time, take care.